And Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 69. Monterey Bay boaters forecast for tonight. West winds 5 to 15 knots, becoming east 5 to 10 knots after midnight. Wind waves 2 feet or less in a northwest swell 2 to 4 feet. And a quick look at your traffic out there this evening. And looks like a traffic collision, San Juan Road near Murphy Road in the Monterey area. And a fatality crash, US 101 South at Hartnell in the Monterey area. And it is about 60 degrees here at KSCO. Up next, Off the Lip Radio Show.
Opinions expressed in the following sponsored program are not necessarily those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Good evening, and welcome to Off the Lip, the show about surfing and skateboarding. If you'd like to join the show tonight, give us a call at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, here are your hosts for tonight's program, Neil Perlberg and Terry Campion.
Good evening, and welcome to the Off the Lip radio show broadcasting from Santa Cruz, California. My normal guest host tonight is not here, feeling a little under the weather, so I dragged the voice of KSCO past Jumbo to Pebble Beach into...
Tune in and lock it in.
Be my co-host tonight.
It's good to be here.
I don't think I should shut up and let my friend, Pastor Rene Schlepper from Twin Lakes Church, is my co-host this evening.
It's good to be here.
He was my scheduled guest. And you know what? I've been doing the show for a long time. I don't get nervous, but I got nervous today.
Well, why are you nervous?
I got nervous because, well, I think one, because, you know, during the week, it's going to be you and I, and, like, you know, that's fine.
No big deal.
TC didn't
So I didn't make you nervous. Let's just make
that clear. No. TC's not here. I'm like, okay, but you and I can banter for an hour. It's a piece of cake, right? But then you email me in the middle of the week going, hey, Neil, I've got this other guy I want to bring on the show. I'm like,
just an idea.
Yeah, can you kick it around? And like, who's this? Who's the guy? And I'm like, well, he was the number two draft pick in the 1998 NFL draft.
Yeah.
Ryan Leaf. And I know Ryan Leaf. I know a little bit of his story. I know he was an incredible college quarterback, mm-hmm. incredible athlete.
That's right.
And then made it to the NFL. And from there, it just kind of like, it just was a spiral. Yeah. Into doom and despair.
I mean, he became the poster child for somebody who has all kinds of promise in the NFL and pro sports, kind of the golden boy, had a silver spoon handed to him.
And he was.
And then appeared to just flush it all down the toilet.
And he took a lot of heat over it, too. ESPN, I'm sure. I'm sure all the networks gave him, you know, because I'm sure he got awarded a huge contract. I'm sure Fox, ESPN, I'm sure they just ridiculed him. It must have been very hard for him.
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine that? So he was drafted. It was going back and forth. Who will be the first draft in the NFL? Will it be Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf? Well, it was Peyton Manning. And it's interesting, if you listen to the recording of the NFL draft from 1998, when Peyton Manning is drafted first, you hear the audience booing. And then when Ryan Leaf is drafted second, you hear everybody applauding because by popular acclaim, he was the guy who should have been picked first.
Right.
And then he, because of some widely publicized behavioral problems, including substance abuse, just had more and more difficulty. And with the Chargers and with some other teams like the Cowboys, just didn't make it work. And then widely documented, he ends up being arrested for things like robbery. And but I want Ryan to tell his own story because riveting.
I think he's on the phone. Ryan, you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
You got it right off the bat. You cannot call me sir.
This is Santa Cruz, Ryan. This is not Houston. This is not Dallas. You cannot call people in Santa Cruz sir. You got to use like bro or dude or something like that.
Just Neil.
You know my fiance and her dad have a home there in Santa Cruz.
Are you kidding me? You're kidding me. That's fantastic.
There's a tie. We needed a tie. We have a tie.
That's right. And, of course, you will be in Santa Cruz a week from Friday at the community gathering of mental health hosted at the church that I pastor, Twin Lakes Church. That's Friday night, October 12th, 7 p.m. It's free to the public. I hope everybody comes out to hear Ryan Leaf in person. That's Twin Lakes Church. Go to tlc.org/mentalhealth for more info.
Ryan, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
I want to thank you. You can call me sir again. you do that one more time and I fine you $5. Okay, this is your show. This is your show. I am honored to have you as my guest on the show, and I want to make sure that it comes across what you want to talk about. So, you know, I'm sure everything's been dragged across you've been dragged across the coals over the years and now doing some incredible work. So I want this to be your show. As Pastor Renee's show, and begin where you'd like to start and where you'd like to talk about what you'd like to talk about.
I'm sorry, Ryan. Go ahead. You just have an incredible arc to your career and an incredible story to tell. And
I don't mean to minimize it ever, but it was just a rough patch I had to get through, just like everybody does. You know, every human being is flawed, just like me, and we're just trying to be better every single day. Mine was just very public.
That's right. You're a rough patch that a lot of people have, right? Right out of college when they're young adults, a lot of people go through a very similar rough patch, but yours was very public.
Can you talk about your college career and how how that came about and how well you did in college and then just touch upon how you made it to the NFL draft and was picked second.
Yeah, so I chose to go to Washington State, which was a great choice by me. I got to be with some great teammates, great coach, and we did something that hadn't been done in that school's history since 1931, so 67 years at the time, and we won a championship and played for the national championship in the Rose Bowl. And I was also a Heisman Trophy candidate with Peyton Manning and Charles Woodson and Randy Moss. So three other pretty good football players. and it was I was kind of living my dream. You know, my dream was to be a professional athlete. And there I was. And I was 21 years old. And the Chargers drafted me second overall and gave me, you know, $31 million. And I was off and running.
Wow.
And go ahead.
Can I backtrack just for one second? Before college, even I heard you say in another interview that when as young as 13 years old, you were so good at playing football that you had an interesting quote. You said, "I thought I was a god."
Well, I mean I think that came along.
I love that
later
quote.
In life.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there was a joke that went on that Sports Illustrated ran with in college. That went, what was the difference between God and Ryan Leaf? And the punchline was that God doesn't think he's Ryan Leaf. You know, it was funny. You know, sometimes when you're standing in front of 100,000 people and you kind of put your arms out and everybody's cheering you and placing you on a pedestal. I mean, there probably can be a godlike thing that happens there. And what did is I just thought I was better than everybody, you know, regardless of who you were or what. I was a better person. That's the way I thought it.
And you, in fact, you said you even when you were in high school looked at people who drank and did drugs and thought of them as morally corrupt and you're so righteous and you're better than them. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't drink. I didn't use drugs. I'd go to parties with a six-pack of 7-Up, and I just thought I was morally superior than everybody else.
I wouldn't go to a party with him.
And I just was going to, you know, I was going to get it out of that. I was going to get out of that town, and I was going to make it big. And, you know, and I did all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a mission. I had a goal, and, I achieved all that. I just also didn't really ever learn how to truly deal with failure. Mm-hmm. And that would be the ultimate, I think, thing that would come along that would derail me.
Right.
And was your performance in the NFL, was that triggered by the mental health state that you were in or the $31 million that puts you under a lot of pressure? This is all about mental health, and you want to come in here and talk about mental health and recovery and drug addiction. Where did that all begin for you? Did that begin when you got the check for $31 million, or did it start before that?
Yeah, it probably started when I was around 13, you know.
13? Oh, really?
Just being on that pedestal and kind of developing the understanding, you know, that I thought I was better than people, but also that it mattered about what people saw rather than actually who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all about perception,
performance,
and then the idea that success was money, power, and prestige. I thought that was success. I don't know where I learned it from. I certainly didn't from my family or anything like that. But I developed the idea that it was what people saw rather than who I really was. And if I had all these things that made me a success, that's all I ever needed.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the mental health situation? It's not really touched on very much, but the mental health situation in professional sports. And I can think of some names that come to mind. Junior Seau, what happened to him? Ray Rice, Ray Lewis, to name but a few. Is this something that's kind of is mental health situation swept under the rug in professional sports, do you think?
I don't think it's ever really addressed, just because we were supposed to be big, strong football players, and that stigma exists in a way where, you know, when you ask for help, that's like weakness to those types of people. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of what we try to accomplish when we're out there speaking, is to try to remove that stigma so that people who are going through similar things that I did don't have to continue to do it in the darkness, but rather shine a light on it and reach out and know that it's probably the strongest thing you can do. I mean, you exercise your body every single day. You go to the gym, you work out, you do all this to maintain your body, but the strongest muscle you have in your entire body is your brain.
That's right.
If you wouldn't, you know, train that, that's just doing yourself a disservice. And I think a lot more people are coming around to that, but we need to continue to keep doing work and shining light on it.
Can I ask you a question? Do you like yourself better today, or do you like yourself better when you had that $31 million check was, you know, hit your wallet, back your back pocket?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty simple answer. you know, I thought that was the end all be all, but it certainly isn't. I definitely like this version of myself that is continuing to evolve.
Man, I just love every word that you're saying is just so true and so important. Do you mind, Neil, if we get back to Ryan's story? So you grew up and you said you kind of thought of yourself as better than everybody else because you had this skill. And then you get into the NFL, you're drafted second, you have that $31 million check, you're clearly incredibly famous at a very young age, and a huge spotlight is on you. And so narrate for us what happened over the next few months and year or so. What happened next? Where did the wave crest, and where did the downfall start?
Yeah, it probably happened in game three.
Mm-hmm.
I won my first two starts. No rookie had done that since 1983 and John Elway. And then I walked into a game where I played the worst game I'd ever played in my life. I was humiliated and embarrassed. And what derailed me wasn't necessarily how poorly I played, but how I dealt with it over the next couple of days with the media, with just my coaches, my teammates, and everything like that. And even though I would bounce around and play for 5 years in the NFL, I really can look back on that time and how I reacted to the situation where truly my career ended.
I seem to remember you treating somebody poorly and then reading an apology in the locker room the next day or something like that. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, that was after that game and how I dealt with it. I confronted and tried to intimidate a reporter. The internet had really just started, and somebody had videotaped it, and it kind of became a viral video, one of the first viral videos. And it was,
you swore, you like you were yelling, swearing at a reporter, something like that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a caricature of me and kind of my identity anytime anybody brought me up. And then the next day, my dad and other people tried to convince me to give an apology, and I did it, you know, pretty much against my will, and it looked disingenuous, and
you were smirking.
I don't know if I was smirking. I just read it and dismissed it as like I had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do this, but I had to do this.
Right. And you were saying it, but it didn't fool anybody, right?
Well, I don't think there was an attempt to fool anybody.
Right,
so
right.
you know, it just spiraled. And then I continued to get more defensive. And now, if you're able to perform on the football field, I wasn't performing either. The next game after that, I went out and threw four interceptions against the Giants. And it just, it kind of kept spiraling out of control. And I had the second year to try to get better in the off season to try to develop, you know, go get some help and do some life skill stuff. And it just, you know, I wasn't going to do any of that. That for me was weakness. And that kind of was the epitome of what I rail against now. And that's probably a big reason why.
Yeah, you said something like you were so defensive that even at that point, you still felt like a victim. Talk to me a little bit more about that, because you said that's how drug addicts think. And looking back, you think to yourself, that's how you got into drug addiction, because you were thinking like drug addicts think before you were doing what drug addicts do. Talk to us about that.
I'm not, you know, I was behaving that way. I know how drug addicts behave now because I am one.
Yeah.
So I it makes sense now. I was a drug addict long before I ever took a drug, in the way I behaved.
How'd that work?
How I behaved, how I acted.
How were you a drug addict before you took drugs?
Because I behaved as one. I was a drug addict long before I ever took a drug, is the way I put it.
Characterize that behavior, like narcissistic, defensive, else?
Narcissistic, defensive, judgmental, fearful, angry, all those things.
Uh-huh.
And that existed since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I just, my drug of choice was competition.
Right.
And whenever, as long as I had competition, I never drank, I never used or anything like that. It's what altered my mood. And when I just walked away from the game after 5 years in the NFL, that competition was gone. And
so your purpose in life is gone at 26 years old.
How are you feeding that? How are you feeding that today?
How am I feeding what?
The wanting to be competitive. How are you being competitive today? Because I'm sure you're still competitive in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I just understand that it's not important. It's important to enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I play a lot of golf. Golf can be really self-competitive.
I just go off the golf course. I sucked.
You should play Ryan. You'd make Ryan feel better when Ryan gets into town.
I lost $25 to my friends.
Ryan,
Ryan, how's that? That's not good, is it?
Ryan, you need to play Neil.
Can I ask you, who served as a mentor for you in the NFL? I have a picture that Tony Dungy was perhaps a man that maybe meant a lot to you. I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I was only with Tony and the Buccaneers for really training camp. My pride wouldn't let me take a pay cut, so I told them to cut me rather than take a pay cut and stay there. I wanted to go play somewhere.
Right,
I wanted to go play in Dallas. So I told him to cut me. He was a very inspirational coach. I wish I would have been a better man at the time and really sat and learned from him. But I've stayed in touch with him over the years and had some really good spiritual conversations with him.
That's awesome. We're talking to Ryan Leaf. Ryan, famous former NFL quarterback, who's speaking October 12th at the mental health conference, tlc.org/mental health, for more information. It is so great to have Ryan on the air live with us right now. My name is Renee, sitting in for TC. I'm here with Neil. It's awesome to have you with us, Ryan. Ryan, there was one night that you said in another interview I heard that you said that night changed my life forever. It was right after you got out of the NFL. Here you had this, you know, it's so painful for me even to say these words out loud, but I remember seeing these ridiculous, like, shows on ESPN where it would be like top 10 NFL busts.
Right.
And it would be number one, Ryan Leaf. And that had to just sting. You played for the Chargers, played for Dallas. You got shots with Tampa Bay, a shot with Seattle. You retire from football when you're 26. And then Tell us the story about the fight night you went to in Vegas and what happened there.
So I was there, you know, about 3 months after I had quit the NFL, and they were announcing celebrities in the audience, and the audience was just clapping and applauding, and they announced my name in the audience, and the place just booze rained down on me.
Man.
And you know, that had happened to me before. I mean, you play quarterback in the NFL, you walk into an opposing team stadium, they're going to boo you. It's just, you know, you wear kind of armor, helmet, shoulder pads and stuff in that moment. And in fact, it kind of emboldens you a little bit. And in this space, and especially where my mindset was, the way I interpreted it, it was not only were you a bad football player, but you were an awful person. That's the way that my addict brain heard it.
Well, who wouldn't feel a little bit put down at 26 years old hearing that? It's horrible. The celebrity culture. I had some friends who were really good friends with a celebrity couple. I won't say who it was, but they split up a few years ago. It was on all the tabloids and all over the internet, and their divorce was treated as entertainment. And I thought, don't they understand these are real human beings and they have children? And I don't think they see Ryan Leaf. Ryan Leaf is a caricature. It's like Mickey Mouse or Bugs Bunny. They don't understand this is a human. And so they give you catcalls. Well, I don't blame you for feeling that way, really. But to deal with it that night for the first time, you take Vicodin. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I've been introduced to Vicodin throughout my playing career. I had, 15 orthopedic surgeries. So, you know, every time I had a surgery, they prescribed a drug, an opiate painkiller, and you would take it and for the acute physical pain, and it worked. It worked for me. So when I was in a party that night in Vegas where there were Super Bowl champions and Hall of Famers, where I always felt less than and judged, an acquaintance of mine offered me some Vicodin, and I took them, and it worked. I mean, it's a painkiller. That's what they're called. And I was just in emotional pain at the time, and instead of the physical, and it did. It took away that. I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel any of the anger, the depression, the judgment, all of that stuff. And I was able to walk in and out of those rooms with none of that. And I was just numb, and that's what I was searching for. And I found my answer instead of seeking it in the form of, like, treatment or help or asking for help or any counseling or anything like that. I found it in a little white pill, and that would begin my about 8 years of off and on opiate abuse until ultimately I find myself in a prison cell.
We're talking with Ryan Leaf. If you just tuned in, former famous, infamous, perhaps NFL quarterback on KSCO. Renee sitting in for TC with Neil. Neil, how can people find us on Facebook Live right now?
You can go to Santa Cruz Way's Facebook page right here. Or just go to Santa Cruz Way's Facebook page, and we have a camera in studio. And you can check out the show. You can check it out live on FM 104.1 or AM 1080 or KSCO.com. You're listening to the Opt-It Radio Show right here on KSCO. Which, Ryan, this show is more about surfing and skating, but a lot of professional athletes have come on the show, many for surfing, and it's an opioid addiction and mental health issues are prevalent here in this town.
In Santa Cruz. And let's face it, in the surfing, in the skating community, which this show tends to be more about than football as a sport.
Right.
But listen, that is shared among athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I read where what did I read? What am I looking at right here? I'm trying to find my notes. It wrote where if anybody can recover, if you can recover, anybody can.
Yeah,
right,
you,
Ryan?
You said that, Ryan.
You said that, right? Is that do you truly believe that, or is it because you're a football player? You're very strong-willed. You're very competitive. Can everybody recover?
Yeah. What do you say to the person who says, "Well, of course Ryan Leaf could recover"? I mean, you know, way back when, he had all the discipline of being a pro football player. So he just applied willpower, and it worked.
And let me add, what was your lowest point, and how did you begin the road to recovery? How did you put the cap back on the pill bottle, or the cork back on in the bottle of booze or whatever? How did you start that road to recovery?
Well, the sheriff's department helped me. They showed up at my house and arrested me and placed me in prison. And this was a perfect example of being a drug addict long before I ever took a drug, because the drug was taken away from me, yet nothing changed. I was the same angry, judgmental, self-loathing person that I'd always been, just a way to medicate it. So I did nothing in prison. I spent 26 of the 32 months I was in there doing nothing. And then my higher power, I guess, showed up in the form of my roommate. He was a Afghan Iraqi war veteran. And he had done something a lot of people had done in their lives, and that's drive drunk one night. And it so happened that he killed somebody, and he had spent the last 8 years in there. And I watched him try to better himself every single day. And he had made amends for what he'd done, and he wanted to hopefully someday get out and go to engineering school on his GI Bill and just, you know, be a product of society that can be helpful. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at him like he was crazy, because I'm like, look where we're at. You know, we're losers, man. And finally, I guess one day he felt comfortable enough to get on me, and he confronted me and said, "You have your head buried in the sand, Ryan. And you don't understand the value you have, not only for the men in here, but for when you get out."
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to go down to the prison library, and we're going to help prisoners who don't know how to read learn how to read.
Wow.
And that day essentially started. I didn't realize it at the time that this was like the moment that there was a conscious shift that happens. But you got to keep going back, right? You just can't do it once. It's like going to the gym. You don't go to the gym one day, and the next day you wake up and look in the mirror and look like The Rock. You have to be consistent. You have to show up. And that's essentially what changed for me. You know, it turns out that, you know, my roommate ended up being, you know, essentially my guardian angel.
Hmm. And you said your purpose now is being of service to other human beings. That's the focus now, right?
Well, it had to be the foundation of it. You know, I mean, there's the cool thing about getting sober, getting healthy, finding recovery, getting mentally healthy. You know, you can. You know, all those dreams and goals you had before, you can start to live the life. And now recovery is the foundation of it for me. It's what starts. But what I'm able to do now, you know, this is the first year that I've got to call college football games for the Pac-12 Network.
That is so cool.
I got my own radio show every morning. I have a family, a little boy who's going to be 1 year old on Friday.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. It's just, you know, I'm able to live that peaceful, unchaotic life now because of my choice to surrender and accept help.
By the way, you got a great radio voice.
He does.
You really do sound great on the radio.
Are you still in touch with that man who helped you, the war veteran?
Yeah, he got out like a month after me, and I was recently – he moved to Nashville, and I was recently down in Nashville speaking, and we got together because we hadn't seen each other since we got out. We'd kept in touch. He's in engineering school at Lipscomb University, going to try to be a helicopter pilot.
Good.
And had himself a little girl himself. And yeah, there was 88 guys on our cell block, 86 of which have gotten out and returned or never got out. There's only two of us that are still out, and it's me and him. And it just kind of shows you what
that
we're
is
the exception.
Amazing.
You know, we're the That's exception. The rule is you go back.
That's an incredible number. If you are wondering who we're talking to, we are talking to Ryan Leaf, the really legendary, perhaps famous or infamous, former NFL quarterback, who we've all, if you're a football fan, you know the name, Ryan Leaf. And you may have been wondering, whatever happened to Ryan Leaf? And we have a chance to find out today on the radio and then live Friday night, October 12th. Ryan will be speaking at the Community Gathering of Mental Health hosted by Twin Lakes Church. That's over near Cabrillo College. For more info, tlc.org/ mental health. And this is the Off the Lip Radio Show.
Thank you. And Ryan, can you give us your radio show? Can you tell us a little bit about it and how people can maybe listen to it every morning? I'm sure it's a podcast or there's a website. People can come listen to your message.
Yeah, it's on Sirius XM. It's on channel 373 called Pac-12 This Morning. We talk everything Pac-12 from football, basketball, baseball, gymnastics, softball, soccer, whatever, anything in the Pac-12 conference up and down the coast every morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific.
Are you going to hit the sidelines again, do you think? Coaching maybe in your future?
No. No, I don't have the patience for that, and you know, I don't know if necessarily I deserve to ever coach again just because of the way I took advantage of
Ryan, do you ever
my players that I coached.
Yeah. Do you ever cover surfing or skating?
You know, my business partner surfs a lot. In fact, he just flew halfway around the world to the Indian Ocean to surf recently. I mean, he's really, really into it. I tried to surf when I played with the Chargers a little bit. I just never got into it.
Now that you got Santa Cruz ties. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We spend enough time up there. But usually when I get up there, I always roll down to Monterey and go play
some
golf down there in the peninsula. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to playing with you someday. Your son's name is what?
MacGyver.
Do you see MacGyver? His name is MacGyver?
MacGyver.
Yeah. MacGyver.
Like
I love
TV
that.
Character. That's
do you see your Do you see MacGyver one day putting pads and a helmet on?
That's a great question. Yeah,
no.
Does MacGyver play Pop Warner?
Not yet. He's not. No. Or will he? Do you think? Are you going to steer him towards football or not?
No, he won't. He won't wear. He won't play football.
Okay. Why not?
Because a lot of my cousin works in the neuroscience division, and has a bunch of neurosurgeon friends, and they've all said don't let what we see every day. Don't let your kids play sports where they get banged around in the head.
Are you experiencing any side effects yourself, you think?
Well, I'm probably living with CTE, but I think the substance abuse brought me to the forefront to deal with things in a healthy, positive way. You know, I see a therapist, I exercise, I do a lot of, you know, cognitive behavior therapy and things like that. So
that's great.
I think the substance abuse side of it and me getting in trouble kind of really made me address these things in a healthy, positive way, where guys who are dealing with CTE haven't been able to because they were so fearful of showing weakness and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
And instead, they thought it was better to take their own lives. And the fact that they're not here anymore is a crime.
Right, I got a question for you. I've had community leaders on the show. Many of them, we've talked about drug abuse. We've talked about homelessness, which hits this town hard. Opioid abuse, opioids in schools, and the word that comes up is solution. I don't see that the solution has not been found, and I probably don't think that you're the answer to it, but do you have an idea of what the solution we need to do to come up with the solution to rid ourselves of opioids and to not let people go down the path that you went down? Is there any solution at all?
Well, opioids are there. They were made for a reason, right? They do their job for acute physical pain, for people who are in chronic, constant pain. So it's understandable. This is all – opiates are just a mood-altering substance. Alcohol is a mood-altering substance. Drugs, gambling, sex, food sometimes. I mean, those are just ways for you to alter your mood. This is a mental health crisis. This is something that – is at the core of mental health, and that's what needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
And it has to be able to be seen as what it is. It's a health crisis. It's a disease.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been seen that way. It's been seen in the words used like crazy or nut house, like that.
Right.
That has to change. The stigma has to change. And who knows? You know, I may not be alive by the time the stigma changes.
Yeah.
There were
things
that people started in the 60s that still haven't changed now.
Yeah.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you just throw in the towel at night.
Right.
You just, you keep, you know, I keep showing up. Next Friday, I'm going to show
that's
up.
That's right.
I'm going to tell my story. I'm going to be part of the solution. That's all I can control. I can't control what somebody else does with the message.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or anybody else. I can just control what I do, and that's the most important thing to remember.
Ryan, I want you to know that the big picture of this conference, and we're starting with some special events on Thursday. Then we go with there's workshops and keynotes on Friday, workshops and keynotes on Saturday. Again, people can get more info, tlc.org/mental health. But the whole point of the conference is destigmatizing. We got to get this stuff out and talk about it. And this is not a quote-unquote religious event, by the way. Obviously, as a pastor, I don't think there's anything wrong with religious events at their best. But that's not what this is. This is an interdisciplinary event where we have pulled in absolutely the people who are the tops in their field in the Bay Area and beyond. Talking about this, if I may, just
sure,
a couple of the workshops we're going to be having, Ryan. Dr. Vanessa De La Cruz, she is the chief of psychiatry at Santa Cruz County Health Services Agency, and she's going to be doing a whole workshop on dual diagnosis. That's when people have both mental illnesses and a substance abuse disorder simultaneously, which we see a ton here in Santa Cruz. And she's going to be talking about that. What is it? What can we do for people who have dual diagnosis? Then that's on Friday. On Saturday, one of our keynote addresses is going to be Dr. Michael Fitzgerald. He's the executive director at the Behavioral Health Services at El Camino Hospital over the hill. And he's an expert in all of this. And his topic is diseases of despair, drugs, depression, and modern man. You know, what is it about depression and drugs that seems to be surfacing more now than ever? He
right.
calls them diseases of despair. But again, these are experts, the top people in their fields here in the Bay Area. They're all going to be part of this conference. And Ryan, I appreciate your coming and being the keynote, because of course what we're hoping is, and what we're certain of, is that your name, people hear you on the Pac-12 network, they know of your experience in the NFL, and just you being public about this is going so far toward destigmatizing. And if there's anybody listening who's got kids, you've got grandkids who are, you know, adolescent or above, you have any friends who are pro athletes or anybody who's maybe struggling with substance abuse, addiction, mental health, please bring them out to hear Ryan Friday night and check out all these other conferences that we're offering. Ryan, is there anything you want to add about that conference and about the stuff you've just heard me talk about?
I just think it's, you know, I just applaud the area for putting something like this on to help the community. You know, every time I go somewhere and speak where the communities come together, I always want to make sure and applaud the community with what they're doing, because they're being part of the solution. You know, they're not just kind of rolling their eyes or saying,
right.
"Oh yeah, what a shame."
Right.
You know, sometimes it's disappointing in the attendance of these things, but mm-hmm. as I always say, you know, when you show up to these things, you are trying to better yourself, and you have to take an honest look at yourself too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't want to simply do that.
Yeah.
For those who are nervous about coming, or would be coming to that event,
right.
to see you,
I'll be there.
Can you share perhaps other than yours, a success story of recovery that you've been involved with another human being?
Oh, there's been many, many. I mean, my story gets told in a more public way.
Yeah.
And it has. My friend Jay Glazer did a little feature on me a couple Christmases ago, and I got a message about middle of March, and he said, "I saw your special on Fox NFL Sunday that morning. I want to tell you that it meant so much to me. I went and asked for help and got treatment. I just got out of treatment. I'm 65 days sober."
Wow.
You know, those are the type of things that have started to happen, and it's not needed, but it's validating, to know that people can see that there is a solution and there's a way if you were just willing to surrender and then accept the help. A lot of times people are willing to surrender and say, "Hey, I need some help." But then when you show them the path and show them what the help looks like, they have to be willing to accept that part of it, because they still want to do it their way.
Yeah. Yeah,
and their way doesn't work, right? My way
right.
didn't work.
Right.
My best thinking took me to a prison cell, so I don't make proper choices. I need help.
Hmm.
Where do you see what this situation, whether you don't want your son to play football, where do you see American football in 10, 15, 20 years? Do you see, I mean, I think it's losing popularity. Where do you see it going?
Oh, I don't know if it's losing popularity. I don't think we'll ever lose popularity.
You can probably tell by his accent. You're talking
to a soccer fan.
You're talking to a Brit over there.
What I think it is, I mean, hey, man, they're playing four games a year now over in Great Britain.
I know, so
It's not losing its popularity. What it is losing, I think, is the younger generation. The parents are starting to hold their kids out of it, though. You know, it's like the Coliseum and Gladiators. People don't have a problem watching the blood sport. You know, they just they don't want it. They're not necessarily going to participate in it.
Right.
Well, we got a lot of Pac-12 fans listening too. My daughter goes to Stanford. I'll just kind of talk about that.
And
she does.
They won the other day, didn't they? They lost against Oregon.
They beat Oregon. Oh, it was a very exciting game, but they lost to Notre Dame. But tell us about the Pac-12. What do you see happening in Pac-12 football? Who do you like?
Well, the North Division is by far the superior of the two right now.
Yeah.
The South seems to be pretty chaotic. There's a big game this weekend between Colorado and Arizona State, which should help define a little bit what the South's going to look like. And then next week, probably the biggest game of the year in the Pac-12 will be University of Washington at Oregon. I think they're probably the two best teams in the Pac-12 right now, and this most likely will determine, I think, who comes out of the Northern Division and represents probably the Pac-12 conference and hopefully a bid for the college football playoff.
So we are in Cardinal and DeBear territory here. We got Stanford and Cal listeners in the Bay Area, and then of course all over the globe. Who knows what we've got? But in the Bay Area, it's Stanford and Cal. And so what do you think about those two teams? This year.
Well, Stanford had every opportunity. You know, they took Oregon's meltdown a week ago and capitalized on every single opportunity, and then they had a giant one on a national stage to kind of change the narrative of what the Pac-12 conference is, the Pac-12 conference is viewed. And they just, you know, they went and got their butts handed to them on Saturday night. So it's going to be, they're going to have to lick their wounds and kind of come back.
Right.
And, you know, they host a really good Utah team this weekend, and we'll see. Now, Cal, same way. They hosted Oregon, first time they've been in the top 25 since 2015, and Oregon came to town and pretty much handled them too.
Yeah.
So, but I think Justin Wilcox and that Cal team are much improved. I think they're going to, you know, improve from what they did last year and hopefully get themselves into a bowl game. You know, the unfortunate thing about last year is they started 3-0 just like they did this year, but they ended up only winning two more games after that. So, I think they have a better chance of winning more games this year. This weekend's kind of a toss-up game. They go to Arizona. And I don't know really what to think of Arizona. They were kind of my team of the South when the season started, and they've just disappointed left and right. So we need a team that's going to stand up in
national.
The worry
play.
Is that we're the worry is that we're so damn competitive, the whole conference up and down, that we just may beat the heck out of
beating
each other
up. It's Pac-12 football expert Ryan Leaf on the air with us at KSCO on Off the Lip Radio, Neil. It's incredible. Renee sitting in for TC.
I'm lost in talking about
Check us out on Facebook Live.
I'm lost.
I know. That's why I was just handling that for you, Neil.
I appreciate
that.
Talk about Manchester United, Chelsea, anything like that.
No. Not interested. But
you're a tough co-host.
Leicester City?
Huh? Leicester City? No, it's not Leicester City. It's Leicester City.
Leicester City. Leicester.
You're fired. Okay, I'm going to get back really quick. I'm going to blow him up a little bit. You have SLEs. Is that sober living environments open all over the country? Is that correct? Are you part of that Transcend Recovery Group? Touch on that for us, please?
Yeah, so I'm the program ambassador for Transcend Recovery Community, and we're based mostly in Los Angeles, Houston, and New York. And we have detoxes, outpatient facilities, as well as the sober living environment. And, you know, we try our best. You know, it's ultimately the individual's choices, right? We can't make anybody do anything if they don't want it.
You can lead
and
a horse
you have to surrender.
Right. You can lead a horse to water. It doesn't make him a duck.
Yes, sir.
Sir,
if you say
that's
so.
A $5 fine right there for this calling of sir.
That's
But so do you spend your days now spent showing up and going out and talking recovery all around the country. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, when the opportunities present themselves, yes. When asked, I do it. My days are pretty regimented. You know, I'm up at 6. I'm in the radio studio from 7 to 10. Then usually in the gym, and then try to get into the office in the afternoon. If I can get out on the golf course, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I got my little man now, so I try to spend as much time as I can with him. I go to meetings. I work with people, and when I have the opportunity, I travel around the country and speak. On the weekends now, in the fall, I'm usually somewhere in this great country on a college campus calling a college football game. It couldn't be a better opportunity and situation for me.
Well,
right,
we really appreciate the fact that you made time for us on a Friday night. When you're going to be here on October 12th, Friday.
Right.
At 7 p.m., Ryan Leaf, live, 7 p.m., Twin Lakes Church, the Mental Health Conference.
And you can watch live right now on Facebook Live with Santa Cruz Waves. Hey, Ryan, your quarterback growing up that you admired and loved to watch on TV, who was your guy?
Terry Bradshaw.
Terry Bradshaw.
Bradshaw.
I wouldn't have guessed that. I was going with Joe Montana. Terry Bradshaw was phenomenal.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I do, and it was a bald-headed dude, played for Pittsburgh.
Wow.
And he's now on the NFL Network. Whatever, he's on CBS or NBC, one of those.
I'm very impressed, Neil.
He's an actor, the worst actor, by the way, but he's an actor too, right?
That's true.
But so the Pittsburgh Steelers was your team?
Yeah, that was my team growing up.
See, I know a little bit about football.
That's incredible.
What's incredible? That I know about football?
It is incredible. That's remarkable, Neil. That's fantastic.
Ryan, you're coming to Santa Cruz to be in this conference? Is this something you're doing online? Are you coming here?
Yes, I'll be there next Friday afternoon and speak Friday night, and then I come home Saturday.
Oh, you don't have a tea time at Pebble Beach or on Saturday?
I wish. I got to get back. Saturdays are really my work days in the fall, so I got to get back pretty early on Saturday morning.
Okay.
Well, you've given us a lot of time tonight, Ryan. Thank you so much for calling in.
You guys have a great night.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. We really do appreciate you giving us a call, and it was an honor to talk to you, and I wish you nothing but the best in the future. And if you can just help one more person, that's
right.
A good thing. So, sir, thank you for giving us a call, and good luck to you, and look forward to seeing you on Friday night.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay,
thank you, Ryan.
Take care.
See you then.
Bye-bye.
Ryan Leaf, former NFL quarterback.
And really quickly before we go, I have Andy Mills here, who's the chief of police of Santa Cruz, on the phone. Andy, you there?
I am. Hey, guys. What's going on?
How are
you?
Hey,
Andy. Good to talk to you. Renee here from Twin Lakes Church, sitting in for TC tonight.
Did you happen to catch any of that show?
I did get a little bit of it. And I just wanted to call in and just really thank Ryan for being such a strong person to stand up and talk about mental health issues that affect all of us.
Since you've arrived here in town and obviously taken the position of chief of police, how have you noticed, what have you seen as the state of mental health here in our town?
Well, we have a lot of difficulties at all levels. And, sometimes there's not enough resources to go around for people who are really struggling. And I think that's one of the things we see here is that there's not enough resources to really help people in a difficult spot.
Right. And what have you brought to the table in order to try and help the situation here in our community?
We're really working with the county because they're the ones that have the resources and the money allocated to deal with mental health problems. But, I think it's much broader than that. I think we also need to make sure that the faith community is involved, and Pastor Renee has been, all over that, as well as professionals speaking up in all professions and saying, hey, this is something that we can deal with, and really that kind of that collective efficacy where we can work with one another.
Yeah. That's a huge part of the solution. We're having this community mental health forum, not this weekend, but the following weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, October 11th, 12th, and 13th at Twin Lakes Church. And it's not a quote-unquote religious event, although we will have faith leaders there. It's an interdisciplinary event. There's experts in their field from all around the Bay Area talking about this. And Andy, we're going to have two members of the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office there as well on a mental health panel talking about what they see and what they think our community needs to know coming from their perspective as law enforcement professionals. That'll be a panel that we have Saturday afternoon at this event.
Hey, Andy, what percentage of your calls are your offices get based upon mental health issues?
Well, it ranges greatly, but a huge percentage of our calls are people dealing with significant mental health issues, from the homeless population to professionals.
Yeah.
It's not just one population. And, you know, a lot of people are threatening suicide or at the end of their rope and are calling somebody for help. And the only ones available 24/7 are police officers.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're not prepared to deal with it, but we have to make do.
Andy, I want to thank you for calling tonight. It was always good to see you the other day. And, yes, you do look like Harry Potter with his glasses on, by the way.
All right, brother. But
you know what? Only in Santa Cruz can you go see the Mermen play, right, which is a cult surf band, and the chief of police show up.
He's right there.
Only in this town, right?
Yeah.
He knows where a good party is. The chief knows where a good party is at.
That's
thanks,
right.
Chief. Appreciate you calling
thanks
in, and see you on the show soon.
Good night.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Buddy.
Good night. Bye-bye.
You know, Neil, we have all kinds of other workshops and seminars being offered. There's one really interesting one. A researcher who's an expert on sleep deprivation and mental health. And she's going to be showing research that talks all about how basically we are insomniaizing ourselves into mental illness. She's like, if you're not getting enough sleep, you are going to be showing symptoms of mental illness. It's fascinating research.
One of my favorite shows, he's been on my show twice. I think he's Dr. Bill. I think his last name is Lee. He runs a Capitola Sleep Center.
Okay, yeah.
Fascinating
it
stuff.
It's amazing.
About what goes on in your mind when you're sleeping.
So we're having
a
workshop on
that. I've got to have him come back on the show. Yeah.
That's Friday afternoon at 4. We're having a workshop on that. And, we're having a workshop, a couple of different workshops on surviving suicide. In other words, when somebody in your family takes their life, and unfortunately I know a lot of us have had that experience, what do you do? That kind of grief has a stigma around it as well. So we're having two different workshops about that. A full list of all the workshops. Some of the things, there's a small fee associated with. Some of the things are free. People can get details at tlc.org/mental health.
I got the legendary pastor here in town. Man of the year. The man of the year. Like I got him locked in right here on KSCO on the Off the Lip Radio
lock
Show.
It in.
I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. I got to mention the sponsors of the
show.
Thank
you so much.
They've gone commercial free and normally play all their ads and stuff, but I felt that tonight was most important to talk about what we got to talk about. And once again, tlc.org to check out this 3-day conference on mental health.
And people can go to one day, not just all three, or just pick a workshop you want to go to. The schedule's all online.
Okay. And let me start right by saying I want to thank you, Julie from Toyota of Santa Cruz, my dear friend. God bless her. Julie from Toyota of Santa Cruz.
Hi, Julie.
My dear friend, Farmers Insurance Agent Sean Rovai. Thanks, Sean, for sponsoring the show. John Sisk from Lighthouse Bank. John, I thank you for being a part of the show. Emily from Santa Cruz Mountain Brewery. I want to thank Curtis from People's Coffee, the boys at the Hideout in Aptos. I love the boys at the Hideout in Aptos. My dear friend Jeanette from Hot Elevation Studios. Yes. And no, I don't. I wear a regular bathing suit, and that's what TC was blasting me last week for. I wear board shorts to yoga. That bastard just ripped me apart. My friend Dave from the Kayak Connection, who's in El Salvador surfing right now. I don't know why I'm even saying his ad, because he's in El Salvador surfing. Cindy from Merge Four Socks. I'm writing an article about Cindy, amazing woman who just gave her kidney to her brother, and just an incredible woman. I'm writing about her for an article in the Sentinel this weekend coming up. My good friend, the beach guy, who mentioned there's a house that he's listed, my dream home at number 7 Rockview. It's only $3.5 million, but it's absolutely gorgeous.
Neil's crying.
Oh, my God.
Neil's
I just can't afford
right
it.
Now.
Justin from the Listing Stack. I want to thank Chill Out Cafe. I want to fetch Beach Nest Vacation Rentals and my dear friend Fig from Surf City Sandwich. And last but not least, the guys at Star Benny, where I'm heading to next for a little nosh, little dinner. I'll see if Renee wants to go.
A little nosh.
A little nosh.
Talk about Leicester.
And I want to thank
Manchester United.
I want to thank Renee for coming on the show tonight. I want to also thank Ryan Leaf, Andy Mills, Chief of Police of Santa Cruz, and once again to the audience for listening. I really do appreciate it. Chris, my engineer. I'll see you tomorrow night with the Outlook Radio Show, and next week with another Off the Net Radio Show. Don't forget, tlc.org.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, sir. Good night, everyone. Cheerio.
From From Capitola to Carmel, Red Hot News Talk, AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. President Trump went to Mississippi to stump for Senator Cindy Hines-Smith, who was appointed to fill out the term of the retired Thad Cochran. He told the crowd it was important to vote to expand the Republicans' narrow majority in the Senate.
A real majority, not a majority of one. Literally, if somebody's sick, it's like we have to postpone votes.
Officials are looking over a suspicious envelope addressed to President Trump, which bears the same date as two resin-tainted letters that were sent to the Pentagon. The Secret Service says the suspicious envelope was intercepted before reaching the White House. They say it's being seriously investigated. The other letters were addressed to the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, and the Chief of Naval Operations. Both letters tested positive for ricin. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Recently on the Charles Friedman Show.
This is no longer prosecution. This is persecution. And I would hope that earlier we had a caller who said that he thought the Democratic Party had some kind of a group in it that were trying to take them out or hurt the party because they were tired of this kind of stuff. I don't know if he's right or not, but it sure be nice if he was. If a certain number, hopefully a quorum of Democrats, both in office and nationally, would start saying, look, it's time to start behaving towards Mr. Trump as we behave towards Mr. Bush and Mr. Reagan and other Republicans in the White House. He's a member of the other party, and we're the opposition. We are not a resistance, and we are not obligated to simply behave like shaved apes and scream no at anything the president proposes simply because he proposed it. Which is a rather asinine approach to take anyway, because even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Don't miss the Charles Friedman Show, weekdays noon to 2 on KSEO AM 1080.
The white Chicago police officer charged with murdering a black teenager chose to testify in his own defense. Officer Jason Van Dyke said Laquan McDonald had threatened him with a knife and that the shooting was in self-defense.
What happened when you started shooting? What happened to Laquan McDonald when you started shooting?
Eventually, he fell to the ground.
Did he ever drop that knife?
No.
A New York Times investigation has found that Donald Trump, who has long portrayed himself as a self-made billionaire, received at least $413 million in today's dollars from his father's real estate empire, Maine Senator Angus King.
There's nothing wrong with inheriting money from your family. The question is, how did it get there, and was it done in such a way as to avoid tax laws in an illegal way? Avoidance of taxes, again, is legal, but the article raises serious questions about the methodology of how the money was transferred.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
I've been...
Sweetie, want some fruit?
You have to use the right tool for the job. A power drill is the wrong tool to slice fruit. Just like an antibiotic is the wrong tool to treat viruses, including colds and flu. Antibiotics are only needed for certain bacterial infections. When they aren't needed, antibiotics won't help you, and the side effects could still hurt you. Ask your healthcare professional when an antibiotic is the right tool and when it's not. Visit cdc.gov/...
A man in Oregon is accused of booby-trapping the house he was forced to give up. USA's Chris Barnes explains.
A real estate agent who was charged with selling the property after its previous owner, Gregory Rodvelt, was forced to forfeit it as part of a legal case was concerned that it was booby-trapped. Some law enforcement officials responded, and an FBI agent ended up shot in the leg when he triggered one of those booby traps, which they say were all over the house like something out of an Indiana Jones movie. Now Rodvelt is facing charges of assaulting a federal officer, as authorities believe he set up the traps, including spike strips and a hot tub that was set to roll over anyone who set off a tripwire. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
A hunter in Alaska was treated for life-threatening injuries after a bear that he shot fell on top of him. The Alaska Department of Public Safety said that William McCormick, 28, shot the bear while it was on a ridge near Carter Lake. The bear then fell down the slope, dislodging several rocks, and all of it landed on top of McCormick. A medical helicopter flew out to the scene and transported him to a hospital in Anchorage. According to the Department of Public Safety, the bear was a 200-pound black bear. And McCormick's hunting partner, Zachary Tennyson, was not injured in the incident. McCormick and Tennyson are U.S. Army soldiers stationed near Anchorage. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Good evening. You're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, 104.1 FM, KSCO.com. It's now 5 minutes past 8 p.m. I'm Chris Spencer with your weather and traffic for this evening. Let's see out there. Chance of showers still lingering, 30% chance of that, low around 58. Wednesday, 30% chance of showers mainly before noon, then a high near 69. Wednesday night, 20% chance of showers still sticking around, then a low around 56. And Thursday, partly sunny with a high near